next week.
Radio Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
A new exhibition guest-curated by Snoqualmie artist Elliot Whitehill, Gulwasselton, has taken over the Bill Reid Gallery. Every river has a mouth is guided by the concept of the river as a physical and symbolic connector, and highlights the deep cultural, linguistic, and artistic relationships between the interior and Coast Salish peoples of British Columbia. I'm Jesse Wentzloff, and I spoke with guest curator Elliot Whitehill, Gulwasselton, at the exhibition's opening.
My name is Elliot Whitehill, Gulwasselton. I'm an artist and storyteller from the Snoqualmie First Nation, and I'm the guest curator of the show Every River Has a Mouth here at the Bill Reid Gallery.
Have you curated a show at a gallery before?
This is my second time. So I curated a museum exhibit at the Nanaimo Museum that ran in 2023 for a year. So this is my second time, and then I have another show coming up at the Field Museum in Chicago in April.
What do you like about curating?
I really love that with curating, it's still storytelling, but it's a totally different way to tell a story by bringing together artists and allowing them to do their thing, you know, to make their work. With this show, one thing that I really loved was coming up with a prompt, with the title, kind of the concept and the narrative brief, and then I shared that with the artists and asked them to respond to it. And you know, I left it open where I said you can either create new work for the exhibit or it can be pre-existing work. But I want you to think about the themes here and what it means to be carrying our art and culture forward to you in your own way, and really thrilled with the responses that we got from all the artists. The title, Every River Has a Mouth, and the subtitle, The Visual Languages That Connect Us, really drawing on the imagery of the river, how central it is to Salish culture, both coast and interior Salish, and really drawing on the language. Like, I learned that first Nanaimo, where I'm from, the word kun is language. It's a suffix, but when it's on its own, it means throat. And there's the mouth of the river kind of as like a saying, right? So I wanted to draw on that imagery and to talk about how, much like our languages, much like the river, much like our art and culture, there's something that's always being renewed. They're shifting and evolving. But despite, like with the river, never being the same water at any one point in time, it's always the same river. So thinking about that metaphorically for our art and culture.
Did your understanding of the theme or the title change as you saw the art coming in?
Yeah, totally. Like, everybody has just responded so beautifully and is sharing their own teachings. You know, originally we were really focusing on Coast Salish, and I really admire all the artists in this exhibit, and Alia and I were talking about who should be in it, and we were like, why are we not including interior Salish artists as well? And that connection between Coast and interior Salish hasn't been talked about enough. So this becoming a platform to do that work and to learn, like, the interior Salish side, the teachings that they share, the differences and the similarities, and honoring all of that.
You mentioned during the tour that this is the first Salish art exhibition in the Bill Reid Gallery in quite some time. What does it mean to be focusing specifically on the Salish art tradition?
Yeah, in Vancouver, here in Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh territory, it means so much because we're in the heart of the Salish world here. And it's so important that people see the art that comes from the land represented here. Especially for me, it was really exciting to bring in artists from all different regions, from down in Washington State across the border, like with Paige Pettibon and Danielle Morset, artists from the island, artists from the interior, from all different regions of the Salish world, bringing them all together and hosting them here is really meaningful, and it's been a huge honor to do that work.
Beyond the sort of geographical diversity, if you want to say that, in terms of the artists, you've also got, you know, early career artists, legends like Susan Point and etc. You talked during the tour about being told to go find knowledge keepers, and it really seems like in putting together this exhibit, you've sort of replicated some of those sort of like traditions that might have been passed down to you in terms of how a family is organized, how a community is organized. Does that ring true?
Yeah, absolutely. Like it was really like very important to us to bring together artists at all different stages of their careers, all different types of art practice. Like there's mixed media, there's video, there's painting, like installation and stuff. I really, like one thing that I really hope from this is that people come in and they might have pre-existing notions of what Salish art is, of what Native art is, but they come in and see this show and they have open eyes and open minds and learn something more about what it can be.
Were you surprised by anything, or did you learn anything in particular from putting together and curating the show?
Yeah, I think it's been a great learning experience, and like working with the artists so closely. Like the last exhibit that I did was more of a museum exhibit, and this is way more of an art exhibit. That's been such a wonderful learning experience, and just seeing the ways that people work in their process artistically, the different ways that they think about what they're making, what they're responding to, ways that curators can help artists, or times to step back, you know, and just let the work happen. That's all been a great learning experience for me, and I'm really grateful for that, and that I get to carry that forward now.
You're an artist yourself. Does curating a show like this, does it inspire you artistically? Like, are you all fueled up?
Yeah, I'm really fired up seeing all the cool stuff that people are doing. And, you know, I do a lot of digital art. I do mixed media stuff. But just seeing the really innovative ways that people are doing work, it gets me thinking, like, oh, I've got to get in the studio and I need to be pushing myself more and getting outside the box more.
Is there anything else you think people should know about the exhibit or yourself?
I don't know. I think just really, really hoping that people come out and they get to see all of these amazing artists. They get to learn something about Salish art and culture and the land that we're on here in Vancouver.
Just one last thing. What does it mean to have this exhibit in the Bill Reid Gallery in particular?
It's really important. Like the Bill Reid Gallery is such a significant site for Northwest Coast art in Vancouver. Sometimes I joke that it's the Haida Consulate in Vancouver. And I have a lot of Haida friends, and I know how important this place is as a hosting site for Northwest Coast art and culture in general. And so getting to have this exhibit here and work with Alia Bubart, who's the curator here, and the team has been really special.
Great. Thanks, Elliot.
Thank you.
Every River Has a Mouth is open now until February 14th, 2027, at the Bill Reid Gallery in Vancouver. After speaking with guest curator Elliot Whitehill, Cole Wasselton, I spoke with participating artists Sydney Pascal and Paige Pettibon.
Hi, I'm Sydney Pascal. I'm from the Wet Nation.
I'm Paige Pettibon, and I'm Bitterroot Salish.
How did you come to be a part of this exhibition? What was the process?
I was approached by Elliot, and there's an email saying, hey, can you be a part of this exhibition? And I was beyond honored and fell in love with the theme and title. And, I mean, what an awesome moment to be at the Bill Reid Art Gallery, and an experience to come up and visit with my northern relatives as well. So, yeah, and Elliot we followed each other since, I don't know, 2020 maybe, on Instagram, and have just kind of like lifted each other up in our work, and just have been admirers of each other's work for a while now, at least by then. So, yeah.
For you?
Elliot and I met at Emily Carr while we were both doing our MFAs, but we were in different programs and cohorts, and so we got to know each other, and I've got to see his practice begin from there and where he is now, and we've crossed paths a lot since we both live in this city, and yeah, same, I received an invitation, and I was excited because I'm really inspired by the work he does, and to take part of the stories and story he wants to share here, I felt very honored as well.
What, both in terms of the title, Every River Has a Mouth, and water as a theme. How did that speak to each of you?
Yeah, I guess salmon is a very important aspect of my culture in Mount Currie, and we honor the salmon every year, and it's an important food source in our lives. And so I felt it was easy to conjure inspiration from the title and what Elliot was hoping to achieve with this exhibition. And water is a big part of my work at all times, so. Yeah, and it was actually interesting as I got to meet the artists that were saying they're also part of this exhibition and how much they're relating to salmon or the water as well. There's lots of interconnections, and we seem to derive a lot of the same inspirations for the things that are important in our communities and culture.
Yeah, to piggyback on that, I have not been invited to a show that shows the vast culture of Salish identity, and I am so honored because often we're segregated as Coast Salish and Interior Salish, and when I think of Every River Has a Mouth, I think of these blue ties that bring us together and show relationality and how it goes out to the Salish Sea, and the Salish Sea receives that. And it's important to acknowledge, like you were saying, the fish that run through those rivers and how that food source has been able to sustain us since time immemorial. And so it's honoring land, it's honoring culture, it's honoring our relations with each other, whether we're interior or coast. And I really love the map that's included. I haven't seen that, and I'm always explaining what I mean by I'm Salish. People don't get it. They're like, I thought that was like a region, not a tribe. And so I started saying I'm Bitterroot Salish. So, you know, I've changed the language that I use to describe my identity often, so it feels very honoring of our diverse culture being a part of the show, and there's context for folks, which I think is really important right now.
You both talked about the wide variety of Salish art and Salish culture, and also coming together with a group of artists that sort of span a wide geographic and artistic range. What has that been like to sort of see each other's work and meet each other and get to engage on that level?
We just met this morning.
Yes. But I really am a fan of your work. I was pulled to it when I came into the space. I love the salmon egg so much, and the scale tanned salmon leather is, I think, a really wonderful touch, and the representation of salmon being caught in a net. There's so much you're telling there in that story. You're telling a cycle of life. You're honoring the salmon. You're honoring our traditional ways of catching salmon. So you're also honoring, like, ancestors. And there's a teaching element, too, that, you know, for people who don't know, or for, you know, it could be an archival piece for the future, too, always thinking about the next generations. And I'm also honored to be in the presence of Susan Point. I mean, to be shown, have my work shown alongside with her is incredible.
I mean, it's always inspiring to see how versatile we can be, like seeing the different mediums you use or what brings you inspiration to move through jewelry or through painting, and just how our stories can be told in so many different ways, and to see how people interpreted Every River Has a Mouth. There's such a wide range, and just, yeah, it's inspiring how you can go from sculpture, jewelry, painting, to even applying it to what we wear, and then in a more contemporary version to something more traditional. I feel the possibilities are endless, and it's good to, I'm really happy that Elliot is honoring our elders such as Susan Point, but also bringing in the emerging artists, because they're our next generation and they should be showcased as well.
That's really impressive how wide a variety of practices and styles and everything there are, and it all still feels consistent and like there's the same, some similar messaging and thematic stuff going throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah, how it's all interconnected in the end. Yeah.
Anything else you think I should know about yourselves, your work, or the exhibition?
I just want to say that being from the United States, I'm super honored to be here in Canada, in Vancouver. I think that speaks volumes of, you know, our Salish culture, that we're still strong and connected, even though there's a border that divides us. And I think it's really important to keep these relationships strong. And I think the visual medium is a good way to reach people in telling our story.
Yeah, I think just hearing you say that, it just, moments like these and exhibitions such as these are really joyful, and being able to actually come together in this way and now we get to meet in person and hopefully keep in touch with one another after. It's not always so often that we can all meet and come to the same place. So yeah, this was just a reminder how grateful I am for these moments. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you both.
Thank you.
That was artists Sydney Pascal and Paige Pettibon speaking about their works and their inclusion in the latest exhibition, Every River Has a Mouth, guest curated by Sonemoch artist Elliot Whitehill, Cole Wasselton, which is open now until February 14th, 2027, at the Bill Reed Gallery of Northwest Coast Art. For more information, visit billreedgallery.ca. For CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, I'm Jesse Wensloff. This story would not be possible without the continued support of the Canadian Media Fund and the Local Journalism Initiative. You can find this story and others online at frequencynews.ca.
CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby, BC, striving to provide points of view that are rarely expressed in mainstream media.
I'm not the one. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On February 17th, a National Day of Action was declared by various pro-Palestine groups across Canada, calling on members of Parliament to pick a side on Bill C-233, also known as the No More Loopholes Act. According to the press release for the Day of Action, Bill C-233 aims to close a current U.S. arms loophole that exempts at least 60% of Canada's military exports from public or parliamentary scrutiny. Currently, Canadian components are routinely integrated into U.S. weapon systems and transferred onward to organizations such as U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and the militaries of nations such as Israel. A Palestine advocacy group in support of the bill gathered outside of Vancouver Granville MP Talib Noor Mohammed's office in order to express their support for the bill, and, according to those in attendance, protest Noor Mohammed's middling support and opinions on issues regarding Palestine.
So Talib has to choose a side. Will he vote yes on the No More Loopholes Act, or will he choose the side of Trump's illegal wars, ISIS campaign of terror, and Israel's genocide?
Yes, and to vote no, yes! Vote no for genocide, yes for the act!
Yes, vote yes for the No More Loopholes Act. Vote yes, let's say it together.
Vote yes!
Vote yes!
Vote yes!
If you're voting yes, you're voting, you're on the side of international law and human rights.
We spoke with a local organizer for the event, Atia Jafar, about the background of this protest, as well as what they hoped to achieve.
So we're here today because Canada's complicit in genocide, and as concerned community members, we want to ensure that that is not the case moving forward. You know, Canadian weapons are being used by Israel in its airstrikes in Gaza, in the U.S. illegal assault in Venezuela, and in deadly ICE raids in American cities. This is happening because there's a U.S. loophole that means at least 60% of Canadian arms exported overseas go through the U.S. and are exempted from regulation and oversight that allows us to ensure they're not being used in international crimes and in war crimes. We know, in fact, that they are being used in illegal activities, whether it's Israel's genocide or Trump's illegal assault or illegal ICE raids. So we're forcing Talib Noor Mohammed to pick a side. It doesn't have to be this way. There's a No More Loopholes Act, Bill C-233. It's a private member's bill proposed by NDP MP Jenny Kwan, and the bill proposes to update Canada's current export and impact permits to properly reflect critical missing elements of the Arms Trade Treaty, an international treaty regulating the trade of weapons that Canada has signed on to. Canada has signed on to this treaty, and the updates would represent a significant step towards properly regulating Canada's military exports. It would ensure that we close U.S. loopholes so we're not allowing unregulated flow of arms overseas. We're treating parts like weapons, so we're not just thinking, oh, this is just a part, a product. No, if it's a part that's being used in a weapon to kill people, it should be treated as a weapon. It should be considered a weapon in legal terms. So that's what we're saying, that it should happen. We're saying that we want to ban complicity in war crimes. So we need to ensure that we adopt international law and prohibit exports linked to genocide and crimes against humanity. We want to end blanket permits. Every company requires an individual approval and human rights review. And we want to ensure that there's transparency and annual reports to Parliament on what Canada exports and where it goes.
He is in Ottawa currently. We found that out today. But Have you been able to speak with him on this generally in the past? Like, what, has he provided a stance regarding this issue?
We know that, you know, Dalib, many of us have contacted him since the beginning of the genocide on various issues in the ways that Canada is complicit, and he has not responded. He often does not respond to our emails. He doesn't really book meetings with constituents. You know, if he does, he handpicks who he meets with. I've been calling him, I've been writing to him, and I have not heard back since the start of the genocide. So it's very disappointing. I would expect better, especially when we know that literally Canadian products are being used to kill children, to kill families, to commit war crimes. I would expect him to respond in a more urgent way, but he hasn't. We know that he was involved with supporting the NDP motion on Palestine that passed a while ago, now a couple of years ago, but he really was playing a big role in watering it down as well. And last time I spoke to someone from his office about this previously before today, they were trying to make a case that, you know, Dalib is actually trying to water down the legislation and work with Jenny Kwan to water down the legislation, which is insane. You know, like, it's the No More Loopholes Act. It's very clear. It wants to end all the ways in which Canada's complicit in genocide, and it's really important to uphold it and not to water it down, to uphold what the legislation says currently, what the bill currently says. So I know that the Liberal caucus is divided on it. A lot of Liberal MPs are saying that they will vote for it, and we know that Dalib is on, you know, thin ice in this riding. He came to a narrow victory in 2021, and, you know, the last election, we know that there was a red wave because of all of this fear around Trump. But we don't know what will happen in the next election, and right now a lot of residents in this riding are deeply concerned about the positions that he's taken and his moral compass in this moment of crisis.
What are the next steps after today?
So after today, many of us are going to continue to follow up. We're going to write the letter that the office has requested on this issue that will be passed to the Prime Minister's office, and we'll continue to call and express our concerns. And we're hoping that the Dalib will actually, you know, hold a meeting with us. We've let them know that, you know, they have our contact information. They can let us know when he's available so that we can come in for a meeting. And we would love to come in and have a direct conversation. And we hope that before March, he will commit to voting yes.
This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.